as I was meditating, I was practicing Hong So. With every So, I thought God and felt all your spirits lifted up in Him. This is the meaning of my life, if it has any meaning. The things that I've done, I don't think they're very important, except to the extent that they may have helped people individually in their love for God. That's all that matters. It's interesting, as I look back, it was always my wish to help people to find something, inspiration, truth. But to me, truth meant inspiration. It didn't mean facts, it didn't mean some new system or philosophy, anything like that, but how to be more inspired in life. This I felt deeply. I felt it because I think that everybody who wants to be of help to anyone else, to others in general, has himself suffered in those ways. So that I think people who become doctors have had physical suffering in the past, in past lives or whatever. And because of that, they feel a compassion for people's illnesses. People who want to help people mentally have probably suffered mental illness or great mental distress of one kind or another. And I know that my greatest suffering was always spiritual. The desire for joy, the desire to come out of doubt and confusion, the desire to find what all of us most deeply want. And it's always been a desire of mine. But interestingly enough, you know, it's strange, when I came to Master and he gave me his unconditional love, this was certainly the most important day of my life, the most sacred day of my life. And yet, you know, just as Sri Yukteswar, when you remember Babaji came to him under that banyan tree, and Sri Yukteswar was so excited that he rushed home to get some prasad to bring to him, and when he came, he found him gone. And when he saw Lahiri Maharsha in Benares at the home of, Lahiri Maharsha said, "Didn't you see Babaji?" And he hadn't seen him. And Babaji said, "You must meditate more deeply. You weren't able to see me behind the sunbeams." Babaji's body is not like ours. But interestingly, Sri Yukteswar was a bit hurt. He didn't want to even talk to him. He said, "Why did you leave me when I went to get you some prasad?" Babaji said, I was fairly extinguished in the ether by your restlessness." Well, that's really how it was with Master when I met him. I was so desirous of being accepted. I just, in my mind, I said, you've got to. I just couldn't think of anything else, that he had to accept me. And I know when he touched me, you hear about all these wonderful experiences people have when they meet their guru. Well, he put his arm on his finger on my heart, and it vibrated like that for about 2 minutes, I think. You have to think there was something happening. Oh, God, I don't feel anything. But you know, from that moment I changed. Really, I was a different person. It's strange because, yes, I came to him deeply desirous, deeply just yearning to be accepted. But the other side of me was that I had never wanted a teacher. I had never thought anybody knew anything. I didn't think I knew anything. And I didn't expect to be finding a guru. A week before I met Master, I'd never heard the word guru. I'd never heard the word yoga. I'd never heard the words karma or dharma, or all sorts of things that are common currency today. I didn't know any of these things. I read autobiography of a yogi. That was my introduction. I took the next bus across the country, and the first words I said to Master were, "I want to be your disciple." Catherine asked me yesterday. I've been working very hard on my writing because I want to finish it before I go back to Italy and before the trial begins. And I've got to put my mind there. And so I took a break yesterday. I went down to see the doctor in Auburn. And anyway, Peter and Catherine and I were in a restaurant. And Catherine asked me, were you already determined to speak those words to Master that you first spoke when you met him? Because the first words I ever said were, I want to be your disciple. I said, I don't really know. I just knew this is what I had to do. And I suppose the words formed themselves. I can't say. I don't know. But I do know that from the moment I met him, possibly before that, because I had complete trust. I mean, mind you, here was somebody who had had no exposure to anything, who didn't believe in miracles. Page 8 of the autobiography, somebody is materializing in a wheat field. I don't This one I got to put on a shelf. That one I got to put on a shelf. I had to put an awful lot of things on the shelf. I was so completely transfixed by his spirit, so full of love, so humble, so truthful, so genuine, so mine. I can't put it differently. And so always, you know, Boone was real. He was very eclectic. He read everything. And I was just totally gaga over all this stuff. I'd never heard any of his stuff. And he talked about all sorts of things. And I thought, yeah. My jaw kept dropping further and further. But if it seemed impossible, I always said, did Master say that? If he said no, I forgot about it. If he said yes, okay. Whatever Master said, that was right. I've never had any change of heart. I've had doubts, yes, because I was very intellectual. I'm, you might say, at heart an editor and a writer. I always weigh each word. Is it the best word? Could I find another? And so on. But I have to say that I never doubted that he was my guru. I never doubted our relationship. It's always been my reality. Now, I don't want to pass on to you what I've done. It's been particular. I don't expect all of you to think, well, I've got to be a composer. Swami composed music. Well, I don't know. I don't know. One note from another, I got to try. No. I don't expect you to do anything that I've done. If you feel in tune with that, fine. But that's not what I was feeling when I was meditating here and feeling your spirit. I was feeling you, each individual in your relationship to God. That's what matters to me. People sometimes say, well, what does Swami want? I don't want anything. Honestly, I don't want anything unless I can bring you closer to Master and closer to God. This, yes. Master saw that in me. From the very beginning, he didn't discipline me as he usually does or did, talking about their particular things. Always it was directed toward how I could help other people. I fell into a mood one time, and he didn't say, now, no more moods because you aren't happy when you have moods. He said, no more moods now, otherwise how will you help people? That was always his thrust. So evidently, that was what he saw that I had to do. He didn't talk to me about my relationship with the organization. He talked to me about my relationship with people and sharing God with people. And this has been my life thirst, you might say. But I think that the essence of discipleship, I know that the essence of discipleship is, I don't need to say I think, I know it. Is to get yourself out of the way. You know, we're so unimportant in the general scheme of things. You look at these billions of people in the world. Who are we? I think one of the things that has helped me has been that I simply don't take myself seriously. I'd say that perhaps one of the most insistent things Master kept grilling into me was to take myself more seriously. Not me, but my position, my what I had to do. Yes, he wanted me to take myself seriously that way, and I never have been able to. I'm sorry, it's just a weakness of mine. I know that when I asked Master, he called me Walter, everybody else called me Don. I said, Master, would you like the disciples, the others, to call me Walter or Don? And he said, they should call you Reverend Walter. I hastily dropped the subject. That wasn't what I wanted. Many times he said at that point, it isn't that it's important, but an army needs captains and privates, and you have to accept that if you're a captain, you're a captain. You can't go around pretending you're a private. One of my great problems has been that I've wanted to be a private, and I've had to sort of adjust to this fact. But it nonetheless has not really meant anything to me, because I do see that there isn't anything that I have ever been able to do that he didn't do through me. It's a very interesting thing. But if there's anything I want to share with you, it's that. To be a disciple means to not put yourself forward, but to try to be a channel of his light, his understanding. I have seen again and again in my life that if I ask him to show me what to do, and I ask it sincerely, it's there. He's living right now. It's not that he lived and died 51 years ago. No. He's alive right now. We need to bring him into everything that we do. And I'm only here as a means of helping you to remember that fact. If I weren't here, it's something that happened a long time ago. It's harder to remember. Without going to people who knew it, it becomes history. But I want you all to make it alive. After I'm gone, you can keep it alive. Because it's through that. Never make him a museum. Never make him history. Make him alive, living in your own life. Because the more that you can feel that he is doing it. When Rajashi spoke to me, he said to me, Master has a great work to do through you, Walter, and he will give you the strength to do it. And I've seen that's exactly what's happened. That in incredible ways, miracles have happened. Energy has come. People have come. You know, when we were building this building here, I meditated to think of the shape of the building, and this came to me. The one thing I don't like is the windows. I've wished that they could go up, but I know that to follow the line of the roof, but someday we'll get that. Anyway, the boys who were working on this, they couldn't figure out how to do that roof. And Don Sargent was in charge, the foreman at that time, and he studied all the books he could find. None of them gave him an answer. Finally, the day came when they had done everything. They couldn't go any further until they knew how to do the roof. So they got it outside there, sat down on the ground, meditated, and then they got up to leave. Just as they were leaving, a car drove up. And a man got out, Don Bondarnell. Some of you remember him. He said, I've come all the way from Santa Barbara today. I just felt that I had to come. He said, I'm a builder. Is there anything I can do to help you? Well, Don Sargent said, yeah, there is, as a matter of fact. He said, we've got this problem, and we don't know how to attack it. And Bondarnell said, it's amazing. I'm probably the only builder in California who knows the particular technique you need to build, to make that roof. And that's how we made this roof. But how many times I have seen that when the need was there, the technique, the knowledge, the blessings, the everything. It's just always been there. Doesn't mean it's been easy. But, you know, I look back over my life, and I think you'd say I've had a few tests. It's been an easy life. It's been an absolute gas. It's been wonderful because, sure, I mean, I've had my... it looked as if I was about to be butchered. But then who cares? It's not my life anyway. And always something comes in to save the day. Something comes in to make it happen. And I'd have to say that, yes, it's true. Master needs instruments. I don't want you to think it would be a mistake. I used to say this, but it's a disservice to you to say it. That, well, I didn't have to do anything. Master did it all. It doesn't work that way. I know that I've had to put out a great deal of energy, all the strength I had to put out. But when I did, then something happened, and I found that energy coming. You will see that if you really determine to be instruments of the Masters of God, then they will give you the strength. They will always show you in one way or another. But the absolute willingness has to be there. And the other side of this has to be no thought of self. Now, mind you, it's a difficult balance, isn't it? Because you can't do anything if you don't think I'm doing it. And then how are you going to do it and not think you're doing it? It's not easy. You've got to learn that trick. In other words, you've got to use his power, his intelligence, his wisdom, his energy. That's why we practice the energization exercises. I've often said that they are really the cornerstone of Master's teaching. Because when you do the energization, you feel that energy coming in. That energy is coming in from the infinite and filling your body with an energy that you can feel. And it makes you feel great. That energy is something you have to draw by your willpower. And what is willpower? Desire plus energy directed toward fulfillment. There can't be desire without the thought of I, but an I offered up to God. You have to say, I am doing this for you, and I don't want to enter into it except to the extent that you give me that power, that you give me that understanding. It's a very tricky thing, because it's so easy to think I'm doing it. It's very important to say, yes, I'm doing it for you, but even that can become a presumption. So it has to be done with the thought that you're doing it through me for you. How do you get that one across? I've spent 54 years trying. I don't know how to say it. I know it works. That's all I can say. That if I really, and I have to say this is the truth, and I've always felt this way, I just don't matter. But I know when I first came to his Sunday service, Bernard spoke the first Sunday, then Master spoke the next. It was 2 weeks after I met Master, which was on a Sunday. And Master said, and Walter came all the way from New York. Walter? Who was Walter? I looked around me. I saw that nobody was standing. He told me to stand up. I said, he was looking at me. I said, okay, well. Well, I've always felt that way, sort of, who, me? But you've got to accept, and this is what Master kept drilling into my head. You've got to accept that God wants to use you, not with your presumption, but with the thought that, okay, this is a secret. This is something that has to be done. When he put me in charge of the monks, I didn't think I wanted to organize the monks. They'd never been organized before. But I saw this needs to be done. And so I said, okay, if nobody else will do it, I will do it. And in that spirit, I did it. And many times I used to think, well, it's got to be done. And I'd wait for somebody to do it. Nobody did. So I thought, well, heaven's sake, if it's got to be done, I'll do it. And with that spirit, I've done it. Always willing and eager for somebody else to do it first. But if it didn't happen, never did I push myself forward, but I didn't see many people doing it. You know, hundreds of people must have heard Master at that lecture in Beverly Hills. Hundreds. Thousands of youths must go north, south, east, west. I am sowing these thoughts in the ether, and my word shall not die. That was a powerful lecture. I have never in my life heard such a powerful lecture. I looked around me. Everybody thought, oh yeah, nice. I asked Diamata, frankly, I'm not interested. What could I do? Somebody's got to do it, and I'd always wanted to, I have to admit. Because at the age of 15, I already dreamed of starting a community. But I still thought, if somebody else can do it, go ahead. I'm the only person in that whole crowd that said, okay, and I did vow I'd do my best. Do my best meant maybe dig holes for an outhouse. I didn't know, but I wanted to do something. And it turned out that I had to do it. Who, me? Well, I had to. But finally, you'll see that if God does want you to do something, he'll nudge you along. And one of his ways of nudging has been very often through a lot of suffering. But I've been grateful for that suffering. I couldn't have done it, for example, if I'd remained in SRF. They had to misunderstand what I was doing. They couldn't understand that my reason for working in India was the thought that, God's sakes, 40 years and nobody's done anything. This has to be done. Master's not known here. We've got to do something. So I tried to do it. You want to set yourself up as the new guru? I could not appreciate, relate to, understand that kind of judgment. It just made no sense to me. But it was necessary to get me out so that I'd do what I had to do. Master told me that my work in this life was writing. Well, could any of my books been published by SRF? They couldn't even get Master's books out. I had to be on my own. Then I thought, well, I don't want to at all rival anything that they're doing. I don't want to conflict with it. Well, they told me, Daya said herself, frankly, I'm not interested. Okay, they don't want to start communities. Okay, I'll start a community. It had already been a deep-seated thought in my mind, but I took that as my guideline. So many things I've done just because they weren't doing it. And it turns out that more and more they weren't doing, and we're doing more and more. But never with the thought, as they believe, that we're showing them up. No. These were gaps they needed doing. And Ananda has that spirit. This is a great mission. We want to bring it to people. And I'm so grateful that I've sowed that thought in many of your hearts. I want you to know that I don't at all feel that all of you should do it to be true disciples. Everything comes back to loving God. There's so many ways of loving God. You know, I really wanted to be a hermit. I still have a strong wish to be a hermit. I've just had to accept that isn't my life. But to be a hermit, to be out with people, to be in crowds. Somebody said, well, do you like living in Italy? I said, I don't care what I like. I could live in Harlem if that's where Master told me to go. The important thing to me is, where does God want me? But Master said, maybe I will send you to Europe. There, we were talking of Germany, but I think he meant Europe, because I grew up there. And so he talked of that. He seemed to want that. But again, it was a long time before I finally accepted that he was really behind it. Almost everything I've done has not been kicking and screaming with reluctance. No, I don't mean that. But I've wanted to be sure. I've wanted to know that it was really what his will was. And his will for many of you will not be serving necessarily in this way. Don't worry about it. The important thing is that you love God, and that you love God in the way he wants to love himself through you. Each person has his own particular song to sing. I'm grateful for the opportunity that I've been given in this life to do many things, partly because it sort of cleared up an awful lot of incarnations. I never knew I wanted to be a composer, but I must have wanted to at some point or other. So many things have happened that I'm grateful because they finished up Samskaras. But what does it all mean to me? Honestly, I'm fed up with this planet, frankly. I don't want to come back here for nothing. If God says you've got to go back and help people, okay. No other reason that I can imagine. Because this place, frankly, is a dump. Everybody's out for me and mine and eager competition, fighting. Oh, let them have it. But the other side is that if a few people, and thank God that there have been so many thousands of people whose lives have been touched, I can't tell you how grateful I am every day for all of you. To me, discipleship means that we are all brothers and sisters in that one great light. You know, it's not Master. Master never said, I am the Guru. Master never said, you are my disciples. He said, God is the Guru. You are God's disciples. And this is how we need to be. I don't ever want to see Ananda become Yoganandaism. I want it to be for God. That's what Master taught us, and I want us to live that way. Kriyananda is not important. But he is important in this way, that if he can help to bring to you this great light, then that's what it's all about. I've been meditating lately. You know, I've always felt that I was Henry I of England. And so I've sort of meditated on his life. It's an interesting thing to contemplate because there are lots of parallels between the two. But it's very interesting to see, in studying his life, how he was considered at his time the foremost king of Western Europe. And what do kings do? Well, the first thing they do is go out and find out how much territory they can grab, isn't it? An interesting thing about Henry was that he never was interested in that. He only was interested in reclaiming land that his father had gained that was lost. He wanted that back. He didn't want anything more. He could have attacked the King of France. He could have possibly taken France. The King of France was a bit of a dunderhead. He could have gone all over the place. He didn't want it. He just wanted that one thing. And I've often, you know, it's interesting because Henry I is probably the least known of English monarchs. Basically because he wasn't a flamboyant character. He didn't go out and conquer. He didn't want to do this. He didn't want to do that. But he established England in the pattern that has endured ever since, with the necessary changes of history. But nonetheless, he's the one who founded England. William conquered it. Henry founded it. This has been my interest, to do what I can to help make Master's work solid. He couldn't do it himself. He had to, and it's interesting when you contemplate these things, he had to imprint his vibration in the West. That was no small thing. One person coming from an unknown culture, bringing a whole new way. He couldn't have teachers who would go out and teach really well. All his teachers, every one of them basically, was thinking just of becoming like him, thinking of his own importance. Dr. Lewis was not like that, true. Nonetheless, he didn't really understand Master in this way. I'll never forget Doctor talking about how he and Master would wrestle when they were young men. Doctor said, well, I let him beat me. You know, Master had all the power of the universe. He could have easily beaten Doctor. There was always that little bit of, I don't know what to call it, presumption isn't the word either, because he deeply loved Master, but not this full understanding of what really he had before him. He loved Master. He didn't love the infinite that Master was. He couldn't understand that. But you know, it was with my coming that this resolution to bring Master to people, I was the first one, really. All the others were. There was a story Master told of, he was a famous teacher from Poland, and he used to go into a sort of a cataleptic state and show a certain amount of powers, and he was supposed to introduce Master, and this is Master telling the story. Roman Ostoya was supposed to introduce me only, and he kept saying, "Now, I will tell you a most wonderful thing." And then he'd go on talking, and after about 15 minutes, "Now, I will tell you a most wonderful thing." And people began walking out. And Master was laughing about this. He said, "Well, there was just a small handful of people left. Ostoya had taken over the whole lecture." And after at least an hour, he said, "And now I will tell you a most wonderful thing. Keep the corners of the mouth up." And how Master laughed in telling that story. But you know, none of those people understood who he was. It was my particular job, you might say, to understand and to realize that I'm not being a teacher. I think the main thing that helped me was that I really didn't want to be a teacher. I said, "Sir, I don't want to be a lecturer." He didn't show the slightest compassion. You hear him as a compassionate soul. You ought to hear this one. He said, "You better learn to like it. It's what you've got to do." And that's what, it was just my job. Well, I'm grateful. We're all grateful. Everybody's got to do something. But the mistake would come if I felt it was important. You know, it's no more important to speak than to go out and shovel coal. If you do it for God, that's all that matters. Otherwise, speaking, I mean, there's a lot more chance of falling if you've got everybody looking to you as the authority. Fortunately, I'm the sort of fellow who knows what a jerk he is, and so it doesn't matter. I always sort of think, well, who's me, you know? But at the same time, I'm very grateful that he's been able to use me. And I'm very grateful that the ministers that we've got at Ananda understand this. None of them wants to be a teacher. All of them just want to serve. This is the thing that's spreading. And I know that when Master, when I think of Henry I, that's our job, my job. We have to found Master's work. Now that may seem a presumption, because after all, he started an organization. But I'm going to put it to you very frankly. What is it doing? All personality. That's not what Master's mission is about. All about ownership. All about copyrights. All about we own this. And when we don't look to Master, we look to Daya. We look at the president. We look at... What do people matter? When Daya has said, "I didn't ask for this job," I think, for God's sake, what job? Somebody's got to be president. It's not important. The important thing is that we are here, all of us, in some way or another, to serve a great mission. Now, that, how do we get that? By not thinking about us, our position, what we're doing, people looking at us, all that's nonsense. Think of the need. Think of the need in this world for a teaching that can give people what they all desperately want. When I wrote Hope for a Better World, which I just finished last week, finally, you think I finished it, you've got the pillow. Fourth edition in 1 year. We're going to put on the title page, fourth definitive edition. But you know, it was... When I read these, I've taken on the big guns of Western thought. You look at them, all of them. But it's so obvious that what they've said is just completely out of whack with what the truths that Master brought. And when I saw this, I thought, well, gosh, if I see it, I have to say something. Nobody else has done it, I've got to do it. This is my philosophy. Don't do it if somebody else wants to and can, fine. If nobody's there, okay, then I'll put my life on the line, it doesn't matter. But that book is written, I know Stephanie Raffino Darmini wrote to me saying she had in college, in high school, she'd been educated with so many doubts, she felt so desperate because everything was depressing. You read the philosophy, all these people, it's all ego-centered, compassion, competitive-centered, meaningless, purposeless. Life doesn't have any... I know when I finished Crises in Modern Thought, I heard of Leon Kolb, who was an archaeologist and specialist in Jewish history. And so I went to him because there was some little point that I thought was perhaps anomalous in this whole thing of Darwinian evolution. I said, there are so many Jews in Russia who don't look like Semites. They look like Russians. And I said, well, maybe the environment does change. You see Jews with blue eyes, that doesn't make sense if you think genetically. He said, no, you're wrong. He said, in fact, the Jews, when they came into Russia, converted whole villages to Judaism. So that theory was shot. But I talked to him. I said, the whole idea of evolution is that it's all an accident. Ah, it's completely accidental. And he got very emotional about this, that anyone would dare to challenge Darwin. He said, I'm a specialist in anthropology. He came from Romania. And so I said, look, I'm not going to argue with you, but I do ask you, please, read these four chapters on evolution. All right, I will read it, but I tell you, it's completely accidental. Well, here was the nice thing. I came back after 2 weeks. He'd read the things. He was so excited. He said, you haven't challenged what Darwin said at all, but you've put it in a new light and everything makes sense now. We must spread this truth everywhere. He was an old man, ready to die. But still, he was that excited. I'm excited. These are things that we can bring to people. We can show them that it makes so much sense, completely the opposite of what our Western education has given us, which is all the cause in the world to be atheists, materialists, competitive, fighting each other, dog eat dog, and God knows what else. And if you come in with a beautiful philosophy, oh, it's all love, they say, what are you talking about? But you give them good, solid reasons, and like Leon Kolb, they say, wow, hey, this is true. This I want to do. I know that I'm not going to live much longer, and I hope it's not too much longer. You're not going to live that much longer. We're talking of a long wave. It's going to take much more than our lifetimes to change a lot of people. But these are truths and those are falsehoods, and truth has to come in the end. More and more people understanding this will suddenly come to that dream that I had when I was a schoolboy. How can I inspire people? We can. If we show them that there's a way to. And Master, I believe it very deeply. Master is the avatar of Dwapara Yuga. I don't see anyone else around. So, why not he? It's just that what he brought has exactly the answers to every single doubt, every single dilemma of Western civilization, of modern culture. It's incredible when you look at what he did. He was no scholar. When I've read what he wrote, when I've listened to what he talked, then I read, because I am something of a scholar, not much of one, but a little bit. And when I read all those old dilemmas and arguments in the church and in the religion and in politics and governments and so on, and I realize Master answered this one and this one and this one, and I can't think of one he didn't answer. It's incredible. Yes, for those of you who feel so inspired, I would say get on your horse and do something, because it's really wonderful to see how a few right, commonsensical answers make people sit up and say, wow, that makes sense. I've had so many letters from people thanking me for the simple clarity of logic with which I write. Not me. Master teachings. I was, you know, when I first came to Master, this is a confession. He was altogether, in his public speaking, a little bit too genial. I liked Bernard, who was a pompous ass. No, it's not true. He wasn't an ass, but he was very pompous. And everything he declared was just a straight from the mouth of God, you know. And I thought, wow, this is really something. I had loved Emerson, and every sentence of Emerson is a declaration, you know. Beautifully written, fantastic. I still love him. Nonetheless, it was definitely not Master's style. The more I listened to Master, the more I found that it wasn't just clear definitions. He was bringing a whole new wave of consciousness. That man was incredible. He had the power to change the world. But that change can't be by one person talking on a mountaintop. It's got to come through other people who see this truth, who tune into it and say, not me, not he, not anything. But this, the need for this is so great. And these are answers to it. And the logic that he put in such simple terms that it took me a while to relate to it. And I'd see, but yes, it makes absolute sense. It addressed all the things that I'd grown up with, puzzled over, wondered over, just with simple common sense. This is what we want to bring to people. And more people. I'm so glad that we're on the internet now. Dave Warner tells me that in August, we got 79,000 visits. That's incredible. Companies, he says, that try to solicit our trade boast if they have 2,000 visits a month. We got 79,000, well over a million hits. Mind you, I'm talking through my hat. I don't know what these I don't even know what these things mean. But when people say, wow, I say, wow. I think that people, what people say in answer to us is, we're so happy you're open. We're so happy you're direct. We're so happy to feel that you're straight with us. You're not hiding anything. You're just telling it the way you see it. Now that message can't help but touch people. It will. And if I, in my life, have any significance at all, basically, it's trying to bring his vibration, which again was God's vibration. This is the ray that God chose to use. Master one time was talking to Sri Yukteswar. He said, I was comparing our work with another. I imagine he meant Ramakrishna because it was right there in that same area, but he didn't say so. Anyway, Sri Yukteswar's answer was, why do you make comparisons? This is the way God is playing through you and me. God is playing in a particular way in this ray. And there are many other rays, there are many valid ways, but this is his way, and he's drawn us to this. Somebody told me, and I won't quote because I haven't been given that permission, but when she read the autobiography and heard about Ananda, she looked in the mirror and saw Master's face. Master has drawn each one of you. It isn't me. It isn't your desire. It's much more than that. When I was in New York and I was doubting whether I wanted to buy the autobiography because it was money and I was so tired of reading and I wanted to save money so I could go to South America and be a hermit, it was a real power that I felt turning me left from 7th Avenue to walk over to 5th Avenue and buy that book. Something has pushed us here. Something is pushing us forward. Be grateful for that. But the more You think of him and think, what can I do for you? And what do you want me to do? Because if he doesn't want to do it, then don't say, I want to do it. There's so many ways you can serve. So many ways that aren't obviously important. You don't need to be applauded. Let God do the applauding. He'll do it the way you like. And the other is empty. But when you feel his satisfaction in your heart, well, that's discipleship. When you feel his satisfaction in your heart, that is when you fulfill what it says in the Bible. As many as received him, to them gave he power to become the sons of God. Our job is to become the sons of God. Everything else will pass away. But finally, all that matters is our relationship with the infinite. If I can do anything for you, I myself, when I listen to this music, I feel like crying. I'm so grateful. It's so beautiful. It's not mine. There's so many things we have to be grateful for. But basically what I'm grateful for is God's love. And that love which I feel from all of you and which I feel in you. And anything that I can do to help you to find that, that is my fulfillment more than anything else. Thank you all for making this day sacred and beautiful.